Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. And a very happy Thursday to everybody. It's May 11th, 2023, which is the day the transfer portal closes for college basketball. It doesn't mean that if you're already in the portal, you have to pick a team by today. It just means today's the last day to jump in. And there's been some tweets that that still may carry over, because you can, as long as you start the paperwork today by, you know, midnight, essentially on the East Coast, you can qualify. So there may be some names trickling in, but there's already some big names the last couple of days. So this is Chase, of course, and throwing it over to my co-host Nick. Nick, any interesting names for you the last 48 hours or so as the transfer portal is coming to a close?
So, Chase, I think the two big ones that dropped yesterday that everybody's talking about are Arthur Kaluma and Julian Phillips. And, you know, I'm sure we'll get into those names. And some of these late names, right, it's hard to tell really how serious they are, or whether it's just guys like that are fully planning on entering the draft, but just as like a backup option, throw the portal thing out there. In case they just decide to, you know, go see what their NIL market is, as opposed to trying to get that guaranteed contract in the second round.
And in the meantime, since we last had a podcast on Sunday night, there's been some news for USC, which is out of the portal has come USC's first transfer since Boogie Ellis. More than two years ago now, and that's DJ Rodman, the kind of swingman, three/four, I should say, from Washington State, son of NBA Hall of Famer Dennis Rodman. He has a COVID season left, and he will be transferring to USC to give us about 11 scholarships as we head into next season. So this, with that decision, it's possible that SC may have maybe wrapping things up as we head into the summertime and then eventually into next season.
Yeah, that's right. I think that's pretty likely, barring an unexpected, you know, transfer portal addition like, you know, Julian Phillips, if he has terrible workouts and maybe wants to stay in college and go that route. Or, you know, someone like Aaron Bradshaw, that seems pretty unlikely at this point just with his public comments. But again, like the clutch factor, you never really know what's going to happen there. But yeah, like I think they've got their core group of guys, and Rodman's a, you know, very big part of that. You have to love his versatility, right? I mean, the ability to play some 4 minutes in a pinch, you know, you can play the backup 3 minutes to, Kobe Johnson there, and you know, if you need him to play some backup 2 minutes, he can do that. So I think that's really big, and definitely fills a need for the roster here.
Yeah, and with the additions of Bronny and now DJ Rodman, SC has moved back up to number 10 in the Bart Torvik forecast for 2023-24, which is a pretty high spot to be in. There's still some big names kind of that could get sorted out, as we've discussed. Most of the big names are now off the board. But you know, what are your thoughts on bringing DJ Rodman in on this roster?
I think it's huge, because he's the kind of guy that doesn't need the ball. He doesn't turn the ball over. He gets a lot of offensive rebounds outside of his area for his position. And he can shoot at a pretty high level. So I think he's exactly the kind of role player that any team would love to have. That doesn't mean he's a starter. It doesn't mean he's a star. But he'll play valuable minutes for you on both sides of the ball. And he's a very different player than his father. So I think just because he has the Rodman name, people will associate like dynamite rebounder with that without a ton of skill. But He's not that way at all. He's more of a wing, I think, than a four. He can play some small ball four and stretch the floor a little bit, but I would just think of him as like a combo forward, jack of all trades guy that gives you a little bit of everything.
Yeah, and if you look at just from the KenPom data over the course of the last, let's say, 5 games of the season, I guess, it looks like he split his time pretty evenly between three and four for Washington State, a little more at the three than the four. Interesting. So Washington State was obviously a kind of an interesting team last season that they went into. We went into the season last year with Washington State kind of like a dark horse for us to pick, like, oh, this team might be really good, even though they had lost Abagidi. They had still some players coming back. They had the transfer from Tennessee, Justin Powell, coming in at point guard to replace kind of the shorter players they had had there. And, they just didn't start off the season that way. They kind of really struggled. But as we hit like February, so they lost, they went up to the LA schools. First week of February got swept, but after that, they won their next six conference games to close out the regular season. Beat Cal in the first round, then played Oregon in the second round and lost. A very tight game. So if they played that way the entire season, they could have probably competed for maybe an NCAA tournament berth. But they're just so up and down. They lost to Prairie View A&M on a road game, which we've belabor this these terrible, BCU games that were scheduled, especially the away ones. And they just didn't really, it took a while for them to really get things under control. They didn't have a very good showing in Hawaii for that tournament either. But as they went down the stretch, they looked much better, winning, of course, being seven Pac-12 teams in a row, including Oregon. Beat Washington a couple times, beat Stanford in Palo Alto. So that was actually a pretty big one because Stanford was winning most of its games at home. So, they were pretty impressive for a stretch. And during that time, DJ was, this was kind of like when he caught fire for them. If you look at his like earlier season performance, he's averaging maybe, he's finishing most games single digits. And then finally, around the time of the new year, he's starting to go double digits most games. When you then he got hurt, he missed both games in LA, by the way, including the one where we beat. If he played against us, I'm worried we may have lost the game. But he finally comes back, and then down the last 4 games of the season, he's mostly double figures, so he can definitely get up there in points. But his overall stats for the Pac-12 for those games, those 18 conference games he played in, really impressive. He led the conference in offensive rating, according to KenPom. And the main factors there are shooting, his effective shooting percentage, field goal percentage, true shooting percentage, mainly because he shot 42.5% from three. Didn't shoot all that great from two, actually, right about 40%, but he didn't take it a lot of twos. He was shooting a lot of threes. I mean, almost 2-to-1, threes to twos. And he did shoot a little bit of free throws here and there, and shot a close to 82% from free throw line. And then the other thing is he didn't turn the ball over. He had the fourth best turnover rate in the conference. So I don't know if anything you want to add to that. Also, the offensive rebounding, he was 20th in the conference in offensive rebounding rate. So, which is not spectacular, but for a guy that's kind of a small forward, that's not bad.
Yeah, he's just overall a really solid player. I think the offensive impact will be a little bit higher than the defensive impact for him, kind of the reverse of like Kobe Johnson, for instance. But if you look at his on-off numbers on Hooplends, they average 0.16 more points per offensive possession, so 1.06 points per offensive possession when he was on the court. Only 0.9 points per offensive possession when he was off the court. And then you drill down a little deeper into that and see like, okay, what aspects of the offense was he really helping towards? And it's really across the board. So when he was on the court, they shot 48% from inside the arc as opposed to 43% when he was off. The 3-point percentage was a little over 3% higher when he was on, slightly over 38 versus 35 when he was off. They turned it over less, so they were under 17% turnover rate when he was on, about 20% turnover rate when he was off. So just across the board, he really helped Washington State offensively. And some of that is due to just, you know, the Washington State personnel, right? Like, they don't have a ton of capable backups behind him. But he, even so, like, you can see the level of impact that he had. Defensively, they were 0.04 points per possession worse when he was on the court. But you look back 2 years ago, they were 0.08 points better when he was on the court defensively. So I think a lot of that is more statistical noise than him being a huge defensive liability or anything like that. But either way, I think it's a great pickup for the team. And, you know, certainly the kind of guy that I think could play, like, rotation minutes for almost any team in the country.
Yeah, and that's kind of the point I had made in one of the message boards is he's a guy that any team could put him in because he's not going to dominate the ball. He's not going to turn the ball over. He's going to hit shots when you give him open looks from outside, and he's going to play hard defense, and he's going to offensive rebounds. So he's checking all the boxes of just like, hey, a guy, you know, your lunch pail guy shows up, does his job. Is he like a spectacular athlete? No. I mean, he actually did. His dad was kind of very famous for being very low skilled in terms of basketball, but having, you know, really springy legs and getting up and, you know, getting rebounds. He's not like that. He doesn't have the lift that his dad, the elevation that his dad had, but he's far, it's almost like the inverse player. He's just much more skilled when it comes to just hitting shots. It's a very nice stroke, hits free throws. So really nice addition. Probably closing things out. You know, we went into last offseason with exactly the same 11 guys on the roster. And then, you know, kind of without people finding out, Vince had his heart issue pop up in early July. And then not long after that is when the coaches went out and got Niago internationally. So that, you know, that brought us to 12, but we only added that 12th player because of the because we were losing Vince, we went down to 10. Now in this case, I do think, you know, I really, you know, it would have been nice last season to have added that 12th player being like a point guard. It would be nice, I think, right now if we did grab one last guy available to kind of, you know, maybe even start at the four spot. What is your thought on that? What should our lineup look like? Who should be, assuming, you know, we're going to have Boogie starting, we're going to have Isaiah Collier starting, we're going to have Kobe Johnson starting. Is DJ Rodman going to start in your mind? I mean, either Vince or Joshua Morgan is going to start. So there's like one last spot. How do you envision that spot? You know, who's starting in that spot?
It's pretty interesting. I think assuming that you don't add your roster, I would probably go with DJ and, you know, play a little bit smaller with him and Kobe together. But, you know, I think like you could make the case for Kajani if he makes a leap. You could make the case for Aronson Page if Aronson Page is like ready to go. Rodman seems like the safer pick just because he has the Pac-12 production to his name. But, you know, I think it's the kind of deal where you look at how things are going in practice and over the summer and then make the call based on that.
So I have one thought I do have. Just wait, the current construction of the roster, we basically have six of the 11 players, six are guards and wings. That includes Rodman. And then five are what we would call bigs. I think given the construction of the roster, it makes sense to try to start another big at the four spot. Otherwise, you're kind of left in a situation where you have one of the bigs starting and four coming off the bench and having only two reserves at the guard slash wing spots. So I personally would not be shocked if the coaches really try to start a lineup of Morgan and Vince starting together. I'm not advocating for that. It does bring up some awkwardness. I agree. But I think that's might be something that they're I'm guessing they're going to spend a lot of time trying to do that. Not all that dissimilar from when we, if you remember back to the, what is it, the 2019-20 season, when Isaiah Mobley was a freshman with Onyeka and Nick Rakosevich, and the coach is really trying to squeeze him into the three spot, which didn't really work. But I kind of think that there's a, you know, just the way the roster is laid out. Now, maybe we'll see a major development for Johnny Wright or Arrington Page, and that kind of just resolves that issue, or even Harrison Hornery, theoretically, right? But I would not be surprised, me personally, if the coaches really tried to start both Josh and Vince together, which would be a kind of a weird starting lineup, but, you know, it would be a big one.
It wouldn't shock me. I think it does mess up with your floor spacing to an extent and wouldn't be great offensively. It would be pretty good on defense. We actually did have 22 possessions of that last year, and it went okay. Like, they outscored opponents by 5 points per 100 possessions with those lineups, and you know, other lineups outscored opponents by 6 points. So it was kind of a wash, but wasn't, you know, quite as bad as you might expect, just given the lack of floor spacing. But yeah, I mean, like, a lot of it will depend on, like, can Vince or Josh, like, competently, like, hit a mid-range jumper? Because otherwise you're looking at, it just gets really crowded in the paint really fast, especially when you play Isaiah Collier, who's a guard who kind of needs to get into the paint to, you know, be completely effective. So, don't think it would be my choice off the bat, but I get where you're coming from just based off of what, like, Vince showed and what Josh did throughout last year.
Yeah, and just drill down a little bit on those 22 possessions. The offense really went off a cliff. Not surprising. Yeah. I mean, that's kind of modern basketball when you play two bigs. You see your offense struggle quite a bit. Point, you know, almost, you know, 1/10 of a point per possession fewer when they're on the court together. The defense was up. There is a lot of talk about this and that. Is it easier to play offense when you're playing against two bigs because it gives you multiple pick and roll opportunities to get in mismatches? That's a common thing we hear about these days. I think offense is a bigger factor because of the 3-point shooting on offense, where you can get the, you know, you don't want to have two guys on the court that can't shoot threes together. Although we kind of had that quite a bit last year, but, and then it's not because we're playing two bigs at the same time. With defense, you know, Vince moves well enough that I could see our defense actually being pretty stout if those guys are on the court together and our defense not necessarily suffering that much. The rebounding I'm kind of curious about because, you know, neither one of those guys are tremendous rebounders, but one of the main reasons is because they're constantly going for blocks. So maybe if they're both out there, the rebounding is a little stronger. I don't know. I have a lot of question marks, and if we're going to do this, I mean, the much easier move, right, would be that Page or Kajani Wright show up and they've made some, you know, major step forward and you want to get them in those minutes. It's also easier to just get minutes for those guys at the four, because that way you can leave either Vince or Josh on the court at the five. And then, you know, those guys got 40 minutes at the five, and you can kind of just rotate in Kajani and Page at those minutes. And then you can also play Rodman a little bit at those minutes. So it would be much nicer fit if Kajani or if Aaron to Page, one of the two of them, demonstrated that they deserve to be starting at the four. But that's a different question, I suppose.
Yeah, the other thing that could really throw a wrench into this is if you did pull off someone like Julian Phillips, then, you know, a player like that would be starting at the four. Now, you know, I think it needs to be said, neither you or I think that's going to happen. But, like, let's say you did add one more piece, I think that would kind of solve all your issues, and you could move Rodman to more of a reserve sixth, seventh man type there.
Yeah, which would, you know, I think 25 minutes a game for Rodman would almost be perfect. You do have Bronny there. you know, one of the things now is like, if you look at the lineup, right, 11 guys, all of them played important minutes last season. And that includes Sellers toward the end of the season and Harrison at different times during the season. So there's no like, you know, like dead weight at the end of the bench. You just never want to put them in. But you would expect that, you know, between Sellers, Harrison and Page, it's unclear how many minutes for sure you're going to be able to get those guys. So you have otherwise eight players where you're thinking, okay, these guys are probably going to get the minutes. Now that's also saying, you know, Kajani Wright did play better toward the end of last season. I think that needs to be recognized. I just looked quickly, you know, there's also 20 possessions where Kajani and Vince were in the game at the same time. Same scenario, opposite scenario. Defense struggled. Morgan's on the bench. Defense struggled. Offense much better.
Yep.
Interestingly.
Yep.
So, you know, Kajani did make he's now look in high school, before he got to Sierra Canyon, he shot outside all the time. And I think at some point in time, he just decided that like, look, I'm going to, you know, play within the confines of my team, going to be a good teammate, not take a lot of crazy shots. And that's what he did. Now in the McDonald's All-Star game, I think he actually took a couple threes. And they didn't look super great, but at other times he shot okay. It would be important for him if he wants those minutes to the floor, if he can demonstrate that he can knock down open threes, that would be a very big thing. Now, obviously, one of the things that might tell you, well, he may be struggling to shoot from three is that on the season he shot, let's see here, from the free throw line, he only shot 63%. So that doesn't indicate a great, but he only shot 19 free throws for the season. So I'm not going to make a determination one way or the other if he could ever get the threes down. I know that was part of his game at one time. It was reduced thinking, I think, that he thought he was going to play the five more. And now he's opportunity. I mean, he does have an opportunity to come in there and play the four. And he did play better during the end of last season. But you do wonder, like, is Kajani Wright a starting four on a like Sweet 16 caliber team, you know, or a Pac-12 championship caliber team? And that's something that would remain to be seen.
Yeah, I think kind of like to wrap this up, right? We have lots of options. There are lots of different ways you can construct the lineup. And I think with this group, everyone's going to get a shot to play. You know, obviously, like, I think you're starting backcourts locked down. McCall, you're in Boogie, and Kobe is definitely going to start. But outside of that, you have plenty of opportunity and plenty of options. So, you know, you do need a few guys to step up and progress their games from software. But assuming you get a couple guys doing that, it's certainly a very formidable rotation.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe we'll head and talk a little bit about some other conference news, especially across town here toward the end of the podcast. But we've been preparing to unveil the USCHoops.com official top 30 for the class of 2023. Now that the recruiting services are done doing their rankings, so I figure we probably good time to move on to that. So these are, you know, based upon, you know, look, we're not attending all of the AAU events and, you know, all the different places where the guys who do the official rankings are supposed to be attending. Who knows if they're actually attending everything or looking at the right thing. But, you know, this is based upon our view for the most part, watching a lot of video, watching the All-Star games, Nick attending the McDonald's All-Star game in person. So a three-way tie for 28th on our list. So two of them I'm going to let you discuss, which are Cohen Carr and Garway Dual.
Sure. Yeah. So both these guys are kind of late risers in the rankings. So I tend to like guys like that have more of that upward trajectory than guys who were ranked super high as like a sophomore and then got kind of left up there just based off of kind of like, you know, the status of them being like a top 10 player at in time, even though they've kind of plateaued in physical development. So with Carr, he's a Michigan State signee, very athletic, like 6'7" power forward that is really like peaking at the right time now. Great leaper. I think the thing with him is like how much does the skill develop? So he does show some touch both at the rim and the line. I think worst case with him, he becomes one of those multi-positional defenders. You can guard threes and fours and get you some offensive rebounds. And if the skill really comes together, then at that point, like maybe he's a star and a lottery pick. And then Garwe Dewall, he is actually a SoCal Academy kid who's really risen in the rankings up more into the top, kind of like 30 to 50 range. Same deal there. I think the skill's coming. The athleticism's really peaked over the last year with him, and he's got a lot of length, as a 6'5" guy that can get after it on defense. So, definitely like both those guys.
So they're tied with maybe the biggest faller and has had some really tough couple of years almost. The most famous high school player outside of Bronny James, Mikey Williams. At one point you played for Compton Magic as coming off, I think his end of his freshman season, was projected to be the number one player in his class. He's fallen quite a bit. He's undersized. He's a two, undersized, but he has demonstrated he can still hit jumpers. I think he can create his own shot, hit some jumpers. We're unsure now because of like some legal complications if we're ever going to see him play in college. But we'll see how those shake themselves out. Next on the list, number 27 by himself, Brandon Garrison. Why don't you take him there?
Sure. So he's a big from Oklahoma City, was at the McDonald's game, and I thought played pretty well at the McDonald's game, held his own against Aaron Bradshaw, who's very talented. I think part of the reason he made the game is just the lack of quality bigs in this class, and they just needed some big bodies to include there, to go up against guys like Bradshaw. But I thought he rebounded pretty well, showed pretty good touch. Definitely is a multi-year guy, but I wouldn't be surprised if he went to Oklahoma State and averaged something like 8 and 6 as a freshman, and then was a double-digit scorer in his last 3 years of college.
So at number 25, we actually have a tie. The first player who did not make Nick's list, but he's on mine, Marcus Adams Jr., the player from Narbonne High School here in the LA area, spurned UCLA at the last second after apparently committing them on the day he said he was going to make his announcement, got a much bigger NIL package out of Kansas. Adams was a favorite of mine going back a while now. He's not completely polished, but he's a almost like your perfect modern college basketball four, 6'7", 6'8", can jump, good frame on him, wide enough, very athletic and dribble. He's now playing at Kansas. He may be relegated to the bench, so you may not see him much this year. But he's the kind of guy that I think in a couple of years, if he's still around in college, he's potentially going to be a dominant player. He is tied with Deshaun Harris-Smith, and Nick, I'll let you talk a little bit about him.
Another guy whose arrow is pointing up, kind of a 6'5" shooting guard, small forward, very physical. I kind of think of him as more an idealized Reese Dixon Waters, so kind of a similar body type, but he's a better shooter than Reese, I think. Left-handed, a little bit more twitchy athletically. There's a lot to like there, and if the shot really does hit, his freshman year, I could see one and done potential with him just because he's so physically ready and he's going to impact the game right away, I think, as a rebounder from the guard slash wing spot, and as a defender, for Maryland. So that's a really nice get for them, and I think he's going to help them right away.
At number 24, and maybe guy, maybe we're both people should watch him a little more, is Omaha Biluwa, Bilyeu, am I pronouncing that right?
Yeah.
Yeah. He's actually a little bit like a Marcus Adams Jr., just bigger, possibly more athletic. You know, kind of a big guy that can go outside, go inside, explosive. A little bit of undersized, maybe at the five spot if he's going to play there. But I think, you know, he's the kind of guy that I think could really turn some heads with some highlight plays. And so keep an eye on him in college. At number 23, we have a tie. One of them is El Marco Jackson. I'll let you talk about El Marco Jackson.
Sure. So he's a combo guard going to Kansas, about 6'3", very explosive athlete. He can, you know, I think he was second, I want to say, in the dunk contest. But then beyond that, he has some skill. So he can shoot from the outside. Just one of those size, power, speed guys that can get downhill. If the jump shot comes, he could be really good. And then I think the other thing with him is just being able to become more of a true point guard. He can make some passing reads, but I think he's got a little bit of a ways to go if he wants to be an NBA lead guard.
So he's tied on our list with Cody Williams, who has jumped all the way to number one on the is it On Three that made him number one?
Yes.
On the On Three list. Now, Cody's brother, Jalen, who plays for – who went to Santa Clara, plays for Oklahoma State, kind of came out of nowhere and was, you know, this huge kind of scoring talent. And I think a lot of that has been, you know, kind of imposed on Cody. He's, you know, like a good 6'7", handle the ball, can shoot. I still think he's more of a developing player than kind of a product that warrants like an number one overall. We have him all the way down at 22. He kind of struggled in the All-Star game. So I'm not sure where exactly he is right now. Maybe we're underrating him, but I was not hugely impressed. And I know Colorado is, he's going to Colorado, and Colorado's counting on him to have a huge year. But I know, what are your thoughts with Cody Williams?
Yeah, just comparing him to a guy like Omaha Bilyeu, like I think Omaha might be the best wing defender in the class. He's like a really long 6'8" guy that can, you know, probably play 3 through 5. Cody is similar in that he's 6'8", has really long arms, pretty athletic. I think with him, he has a little bit more offensive game than Bilyeu. You know, at least more offensive potential. But like you said, like, he needs to get way stronger, and it's way more prospect and finished product at this point. So I could see him going to Colorado and averaging like 6 points a game, but then still going in the lottery just based off of upside alone.
Yeah. Okay. So another person with bloodlines, who's a guy who probably talked as much as we can possibly talk about, Bronny James, is tied, four-way tied, number 18 on our list. I'll just very brief. I think we've talked about Bronny so much at this point. But you know, Bronny is a guy who's turning himself into arguably the best shooter in the class. Certainly on open jump shots. He's athletic around the rim. What he lacks is height. And, if he was like a 6'7" player, or a 6'6" player, he'd probably be an easy pick to be a top 12 player, NBA prospect, all of that. At a smaller height, you kind of want to see better handles, ability to create shots on his own more. And you don't quite see that with him yet, but maybe you'll see it more just on a shooting basis in college. Why don't you tied on our list for number 18 is Xavier Booker. Maybe you want to take him next.
Sure. So Xavier is a kid who was rated, I think, either outside of the top 100 or outside of the top 50, and really came on, I think it was last summer, and some people moved him all the way up to number one. So he's a power forward, I think 6'9", 6'10", can jump, pretty athletic. But, you know, at the McDonald's game, he went up against Aaron. Like, he was a big, Aaron Bradshaw was a big, Brandon Garrison was the big, and he was kind of invisible. Like, you didn't even know he was there. Like, Garrison was doing some things. Bradshaw played very well. But, you know, kind of it makes you wonder if more of the last summer thing was he was going up against inferior players and it really made his athletic tools pop. Whereas, you know, if he goes up against more high major quality players, then, you know, he doesn't really do too much. So I think you still have to rate him somewhat high based on the physical tools. But I think Michigan State fans need to temper expectations for him a little bit in year one.
Okay. Also tied at number 18 for us is TJ Power, who's going to Duke. He's one of these Midwest, or I guess is he originally Midwest kid or not? I know he was doing an academy up in the Northeast, but he kind of just looks like the kind of guy that just always ends up at Duke. Probably play there a few years unless he really, really pops. 6'8", power forward, can shoot, has nice offensive skill set, can hit an outside shot. I think he's the kind of guy that, you know, you project him ahead sophomore, junior year, could easily be averaging 13, 14, 15 points a game, depending on, you know, how he develops and what opportunities he's given. Any thoughts on Power?
Yeah, there's a little bit of Kyle Singler there, right?
Yeah,
very much. I know Singler was like rated super, super high out of high school, and he's not quite as high. But if you look at their games, it's pretty similar.
Yeah. Maybe you can talk the last guy we have tied at number 18, lower on your list, and I'll talk a little bit about him too, is the local product, AJ Johnson.
Sure. Yeah. So AJ is he's actually going to Australia now, not going to Texas anymore, but he's, yeah, like 6'5", so he's tall for a guard. He's very athletic, super skinny, and the shot is really hit or miss. I know when it was going, he looked like a potential top five pick last summer when he really rose. So he's got all the tools there, but I think he just lacks consistency and needs to really learn how to become a lead guard more. I kind of see him as like Jalen Green light, which makes sense because they're brothers, I think. So, you know, but similar games, and the key for him is learning how to hone his craft, get stronger, and really impact winning.
Yeah, he's the kind of guy that I think that if he had it all together, he would almost be like a Sean Livingston before Sean had his ACL tear. But he hasn't quite put the package together the way Livingston had it pre-injury. Obviously, post-injury, Livingston was a kind of a different player, more of a kind of a half-court guy. Okay, next on the list, we have a tie at number 16. First one is both these guys SC looked at quite a bit, but one I think SC thought they really had a shot with, which is Solomon Ball. Kind of exploded out of nowhere last summer in AAU. For a while, I think was leading the EYBL circuit in scoring. He may have finished leading the EYBL in scoring. Can't remember, but just a tremendous type scorer. Not great height, but long arms, gets to the basket. He's just a little bit like a James Harden type, where, you know, he's just always has that ability to slink through defenders and get to the rim and score at the rim. You know, the jump shooting is not plus jump shooting right now. He's going to need to do that in college. But, you know, I think him going to a program like Connecticut with all the talent they've got there, what's going on, I think he's going to have a really, really solid impact in college. He's tied with Jared McCain, and I'll throw that one over to you, Nick.
Yeah, Jared's interesting. I think we talked about him a decent amount on this podcast, but undersized combo guard, about 6'2", pretty skilled, like he can shoot threes. He has some off the dribble game, not the best athlete. So I don't really see him being an early entry guy into the drafts. The other thing too is he is very old for his class. So you kind of wonder if he has the ceiling that some of these other guys have, but you know, I think he has a shot to play right away at Duke and maybe earn like, you know, 15 minutes a game and be a really solid 4-year guy for them. You know, I guess the question with that is, you know, Duke has Tyrese Proctor back. They have Jeremy Roach coming back. And you also have Caleb Foster there. So is one of those guys just going to get bumped in the rotation? That might be something to watch too.
Yeah, and I'm trying to exactly pinpoint who McCain reminds me of, and he's just a very, very consistent like mid-range scorer. You know, you can get, you put him at like 15, 16 feet, and you give him space, he's going to hit that jumper. In college, I do wonder about length. He's not tall, and I could see him struggling against taller players. Okay, so we have a tie at number 14, and the first is a guy who is supposed to be committing, I think, tomorrow, which is he was McKenzie Mbako, previously committed to Duke. And then he decommitted when Filipkowski announced, right? That was when he decided he wasn't going to stick around when Filipkowski announced that he was coming back for another year at Duke. Mbako is, he was a kind of a true power, old school power forward type. I guess he could play five in college. Athletic, long, strong player. You know, just kind of a guy you want to, you know, just to cause havoc potentially. I do wonder about like his half court skill set. I could definitely see, you know, him struggling on offense in the half court in the college game. He does have a jumper. I wouldn't trust that at this point. Do you want to add anything on Mbako?
Yeah, I think you you covered it well. The other thing too is like, how is he gonna think of himself more as like a stretch forward to try to showcase himself for the NBA? And if he does and he shoots like 30% from three, I could see him having to come back for a second year. So, but he does have a lot of physical tools, and I was very low on him, but he had a pretty good showing up at the Nike Hoop Summit, which I think helped him a little bit in my eyes.
So he's tied at number 14 with Sean Stewart. So maybe I'll throw Sean Stewart to you.
Yeah, so Sean's also going to Duke, so a lot of Duke representation on this list. Yeah, he's a little bit undersized as a power forward, but he's physically big and strong, about 6'8", 230. Can really rebound, plays with a high motor, and you know, kind of more of a developing skill set, but I think he can impact the game at Duke right away on the offensive glass, and maybe, you know, turn into like a double-double guy by the end of his career there.
Okay, so at number 13 on our list is Jacoby Walter. So he is higher on your list than mine. Kind of an interesting, you know, wing-type player, athletic. Why don't you – I'll let you kind of discuss him a little more.
Sure. So he's a two-way kind of power wing, decent shooter, but needs to get a little bit better there. I think he has a lot of defensive potential too, just because he's, you know, a guard with long arms, and has some versatility. I think he can guard up the lineup a little bit. Solid athlete, you know, runs the floor pretty well, fills lanes, can cut. He's shown a little bit of vision, you know, and some passing ability at times, but I think it's more like the skill set with the size and the length, and some feel, and you know, it's kind of the Scott Drew factor too, where I think he goes there and can fit into the rotation right away, maybe average like 8 to 10 points a game as a freshman, and then you know, either go pro at that point or come back and be like a monster sophomore for Baylor next year.
So number 12 on our list is maybe the most forgotten about player in this class, perhaps because we didn't really see him in the All-Star game so far. Previously, like a top five guy who ended up going signing with Kentucky. He was at Kanye West's Academy. And then before that, that's cool, went out, which is Robert Dillingham. Dillingham is point guard similar to A.J. Johnson. Better shooter, more of a consistent point guard, high-end potential, could also play the two. I'm not sure exactly how he'll fit in with, you know, DJ Wagner over there, but very high-level prospect too. For some, I really think that he's just a kind of a victim, part of the program that Kanye had just not being all that strong, his AAU not being all that strong, and then kind of people just losing track of him. But what do you have any additional thoughts on Dillingham?
Yeah, I mean, the talent's still there. Like, he's a dribble pass shoot guy, about a 6'2" point guard. Has a lot of Darius Garland in this game. Has to develop more, I think, as a lead guard. But I think the potential is there. Like you said, the concern is just like with DJ Wagner there, both those guys are kind of ball dominant, and it makes you wonder how it's all going to work.
So number 11 on our list is the latest guy to spurn UCLA, which is Andrei Stojakovic, son of, kind of the legendary King player, Peja Stojakovic. This year, I mean, with a lot of college basketball, a lot of famous sons going to be in college basketball this year. Stojakovic is going to Stanford. A lot of similarities to his dad, about the same height, a little shorter right now, but I think he's probably still growing. I think his dad was actually like 6'9". He's about 6'7". Definitely has really strong kind of shooting guard skills. Not insanely quick, but just highly skilled, quick enough, great handle, can shoot, can kind of score in the mid-range. He's the kind of guy that I think, in the right circumstances, he can really score a lot of points in college. The problem is, I don't think he's going to be in the right circumstances because he's going to Stanford. So he and we may not hear a ton about him. Now, look, Stanford's had some guys who put up some really strong numbers. Kwesi Akpala comes to mind, and Tyrell Terry comes to mind. But I'm not sure in those circumstances where that program is now exactly how much he's going to score. So you might see him scoring like 11, 12 points for a season or two, and then try to bolt to the NBA. And depending on how tall he gets, because certainly if he turns out to be a 6'8", 6'9" guy that can hit threes consistently, the NBA is going to want him, no doubt about it. Okay, number 10 on our list is Matas Buzelis, and Nick, I will let you take him.
Sure. Yeah. So he's kind of considered, I think, in draft circles to be the like favorite right now to go first overall, which is kind of interesting. He didn't really flash for me too much at McDonald's, but he did have a high school game pretty recently. He plays for Sunrise Christian, where they played Montverde Academy, and both teams were stacked, but Montverde generally had better players, and Sunrise Christian won because he just had an insane game and had, I think, over 20 points and some rebounds and assists there. So, there's a skill set there that I think is, very strong. And maybe it was just like I saw him in the wrong setting at McDonald's, but 6'8", maybe 6'9" wing who can pass, dribble, shoot, good but not great athlete. And I guess he's going to the G League Ignite, so we're not going to see him in college, but I'd be surprised if he didn't go in the lottery next year.
So we have a two-way tie at number 8. Two of my favorite players, both kind of point guards. The first is Caleb Foster, who came over, transferred over cross country and played at Notre Dame out in Sherman Oaks this past season. Led Notre Dame to the Division I state championship in California, which is one step below the Open Division championship, which was won by Harvard Westlake. They're both in the same conference, by the way, the same conference with Sierra Canyon. Really strong showing by Notre Dame this season. Caleb Foster, another guy that kind of got buried on the, I, for whatever reason, there seemed to be concerted, like, California, the players that ended up in California really seemed to have been relegated to lower levels when it came to the McDonald's selection. And because it to me, it didn't make a ton of sense why Dillingham and Foster, and quite frankly, also AJ Johnson, were not being considered for or were not on those McDonald's All-America team, especially with considering some of the players that made them. Caleb Foster is just a really kind of like solid point guard. Can do just, is the kind of guy that just can, as Nick said before, can dribble, pass, shoot. His shots get the ball to players, leads his team. Big fan of his. He's going to Duke. Very crowded backcourt there. I think squeezing out minutes for Jerry McCain is going to be a little easier because he has such that niche scoring skill set. I really hope Caleb Foster does not get buried there. It does concern me. And of course, if he does get buried, maybe he comes on a boomerang or comes back to the West Coast and they can use him the year after that. Tied at number 8 on our list, with maybe the best player I saw in high school this season in games. Now, this is not the best talent, like the best high school player, Jackson Schalstad, going to Oregon. Just in the high school level, the games that I watched for, he played in Westland Academy up in Oregon, just kind of dominated games, hit from all over the court, ball handler, getting by whoever he wanted to. Now, he's not tall. He's probably 6 foot tall. So that's going to be an issue in college. He's a very strong shooter. In the Nike Hoop Summit, you could definitely see that when he got ball pressure, his ability to get around players degraded a bit. So you can see kind of like college level ball pressure might cause some issues for him. And often then he just found himself taking jump shots, which sometimes he would hit. So he's maybe more of a true point combo guard, just a little bit undersized there. Any thoughts on Foster and Schalstad?
Yeah, I like them both a lot. Foster's a little bit bigger, like a little bit more athletic. Jackson is, yeah, like you said, he's kind of that undersized combo guard who can really score and get buckets. And there's some passing there. I think there's some Peyton Pritchard in his game. He's a little bit more quick twitch than Pritchard. I think there's a little bit of Boogie Ellis in this game too. I think he's a day one impact guy where if he did stay like 3 years for Oregon, he could be a killer player for them. But I kind of think he blows up enough as like a freshman or sophomore to where he enters the draft.
Okay, so number seven on our list is the guy who really showed himself in these All-Star games. That's Aiden Holloway. Now I'll let you discuss him, Nick.
Yeah, going to Auburn. And what kind of makes these lists tough is that, you know, are you talking about college impact? Are you talking about pro impact? Is it a combination of the two? I don't really see a scenario where Holloway is not an absolute like killer college player. He's a little bit undersized. He's about like a 5'11", 6 foot tall guard who has quickness. He has shooting ability and he has a lot of passing ability. So I don't really see him as a pro just in the sense that undersized lead guard is a really tough sell unless you have like Trae Young level skill. But in terms of what's needed to win college basketball games, this guy's got it all.
Yeah. And we will be likely seeing him when we play a road game in Auburn this upcoming season. We have a tie at number five. So I'll go, the first guy I'm going to just discuss at number five is a guy who may be the kind of NBA level, more of an NBA projection, but he played well in the All-Star games as well. And that's Stephon Castle going to Connecticut. A little bit longer point guard, can hit shots, can finish. Exciting player for UConn. I think he's a guy who can make a big impact in college just from his ability to shoot, control the ball, control the action, score at the rim. Just kind of do a little bit of everything, but with a little bit better size. Do you have any thoughts on Castle?
Yeah, like him a lot. You know, he's got the size, the length. He's 6'6", definitely more of a, you know, one or a two than a wing, even though he is 6'6". So he's got that really good positional size, but he can dribble. I think with him, you know, he's got that mid-range down, like we saw in that game against Collier. He shot really well from there. And the ultimate ceiling with him is whether he can stretch that out and be a consistent three-point shooter. But there's a lot to like there.
So he's tied number five with Justin Edwards, also going to Kentucky, maybe. Well, I say also with some of the other players we mentioned, but I'll let you discuss Justin Edwards.
Yeah, he's like a pure wing, about 6'7", a buck 80, maybe a buck 85. Can really shoot. Like he was a dominant shooter in AAU last summer, and that's when he really rose in the rankings from like a top 15 player to a top five. But you know, he's shown some dribble drive ability, and he's athletic, he's got some length, he can defend well enough, but the shooting is the calling card there, and that's why he's a top five prospect.
So we're up to the top four now. Number four, I'll go ahead and talk about, and that's DJ Wagner. I think Wagner has a potential. He's going to be a very ball dominant point guard on a team that is going to have another somewhat ball dominant freshman point guard in Dillingham. But I'm sure the expectation is for him to play at least 30 minutes a game. Wagner's going to score a lot. He's a scoring, he's a score first point guard, very, who's quick enough. He can get to the rim, comes from a bloodline that knows how to score. So I think he'll have a very good freshman season from the scoring standpoint. And you know, do enough probably to get Kentucky to the place where they're better. I'm assuming Shibue comes back, takes some massive NIL offer from Kentucky. And, you know, I think Wagner will be critical in getting Kentucky kind of a step above where they've been the last few seasons, maybe back to the pole position in the SEC. Number three on our list is the much discussed Aaron Bradshaw. I'll let you talk about him.
Yeah. So he's Wagner's high school teammate, kind of a 4'5" who wants to play the four, but he has five size, about 7 feet tall. Seen him listed at 7'1", but I think he's probably about 7. Either way, like, he has a pretty good stroke from three, very high motor offensive player. Like, he did well on the offensive glass, had a bunch of offensive rebounds the McDonald's game. He can finish, makes his free throws at a pretty high clip. So, you know, he's kind of like Karl Anthony Towns in the sense that both are these 7 feet guys that like to play on the perimeter, but might help you a little bit more if you play him at the five as opposed to the four. So really good player, and curious to see how it works out for him.
So we both have the same two players for one and two. We just have them in different order. So I'll let Nick explain why he has his guy number one and my guy number two. And I'll explain why I have my guy number one and Nick's guy number two. So I'll go first here, I guess. My number one is Ron Holland, when my number two is Isaiah Collier. This to me is kind of like a coin flip. I think they each have very strong arguments for number one, and I don't think anybody else has an argument for number one. We've talked a ton about Collier. He's going to be the best. To me, he's easily the best point guard entering this class, which on its own would give you an argument for number one in any class. But beyond that, he is a really kind of developed athlete, strong, really strong ball handler, good explosion, has a really good just kind of general awareness, court awareness, who can score at the rim, get the ball to his teammates. So he can do a lot of those things. I'm going to pass it on to you for a second, Nick, while I stop coughing, but you can talk about Collier in the meantime.
Yeah. So I'll kind of do the Collier Hollins debate. So the case for Collier, and Collier is a pretty clear number one for me. I like Ron Holland a lot. I have him at two, but I think it's Collier for me. So anyway, he was co-MVP of the McDonald's game, right? I think he had over twice as many points as Ron Holland. Part of that is role. Collier had the ball in his hand. Holland played more of like a, you know, super role player in that game. But, I thought Collier dominated that. He went for 30 against Devon Castle in that highly televised ESPN game. He showed everything, showed the passing. He showed to be a dominant transition player. He showed the three-point shooting in that game, which is kind of the biggest weakness there. But he had that. I think you have questions about Collier's jump shot, right? But he hit a pair of threes in the McDonald's game. Holland didn't hit any threes. At Hoop Summit, he goes 4 for 7. Holland goes 3 for 9, right? So I kind of think that, Collier, like, he does need to work on the shooting, but so does Holland. I mean, Holland last year in AAU went 19 to 34 from the line. So I don't think he has a trustworthy jump shot. So I think with him, you're looking at, a really good hustle guy, wing defender, offensive rebounder, but outside of the dribble drive game, I'm not sure how he really helps you. I think you can sag off of him a lot. I think Collier has the passing and also can be a really dominant defender when he's locked in on that end. So the floor for Collier, I think, is much higher just because the skill level is more advanced than Hollins right now.
I can see that. The argument for Holland, where I'm coming from, is just kind of the general impact he's making on a game holistically. I think, yes, half-court offensive basketball player, no question that Collier is superior. I don't think there's much of an argument to make the case for Holland there. But, for example, there's a stat that's called floor impact counter, and it's a formula that it tries to encompass all the kind of things that a player does. And in the Nike Hoop Summit, Ron Holland, he was 25% above the second best player and 50% above every other player, or actually maybe even 100%, depending on how you calculate it. He just does everything on the court, causes steals, gets rebounds, disruptive on defense, can make, you know, pass the ball. Really a true stat stuffer. Just a guy who can do everything. And you can kind of leave it to your taste as a fan, who you think, okay, this guy should be number one, this guy should be number two. It's really kind of is, to me, a matter of taste. And the reason Holland just kind of gets it, just because he just does everything. He just does everything out there. You know, it's almost like, you know, Nikola Jokic for Denver. Just doing everything on the court out there to help your team win. So that's why I went with Holland, but there's a great case to be made for Collier, and I can easily change my mind after watching them play one game in college. So, okay. So anything you want to review before we move off of this subject, Nick?
You know, I think that's great. Do you want to close with like the UCLA stuff? They've had a little attrition on their roster.
So, that was actually where I was heading. And, it seems like even though there's still like 1,000 guys left in the portal right now. I mean, like, most of the guys who've entered the portal have not actually signed with teams. The top guys have, but a lot of other guys haven't. The most noise we've heard in the last few days come from UCLA, because both Mac Etienne, who had some issues in Arizona last year, and Konko is the European player that I think he was French, or is he Greek? I can't remember. They brought him over, and he's leaving too, after not really playing very much in one season. And I think the thinking is that they're making room for a series of international players. They want to leave the roster spots open for Jalen Clark to return and Edem Bona to return. I can definitely see Bona returning. Clark is an interesting case because I'm not sure what he could possibly do to help himself by returning to college after. We don't even know I don't think we know his injury, but everyone just thinks it's a ruptured Achilles. So if he's like ready to go, like in late December of next year, like, is he actually going to be able to help his stock as an NBA prospect? I'm very suspicious of that. He's actually, quote unquote, participating in the NBA combine along with Bona. So, but UCLA, I think, wants to leave those spots for those guys. So they've seen Konko and Etienne transfer out. And the idea is, along with Feblou, UCLA will be bringing in Ademara, the Spanish player, who is a very highly regarded prospect internationally, 7'3". Potential top 20 player, maybe even top 10 if he was in the United States. I think that's an interesting question, along with two other unidentified international prospects. So UCLA is going kind of heavy, heavy international at this point. Not really looking to any American players to bring in. And what are your thoughts on all this, Nick?
Yeah, so it does seem like they're also going to get Bona back. You know, I think the winds were blowing in the opposite direction at one point, but that does look good for them to keep him. So that's a big get for them. So, you know, I think I'm lower on Bona's offensive potential than you are, but there's no doubt he was a stud defensively for them last year. With Ademara, I saw On3 actually did include him in their rankings, and I think they had him at 20. So, yeah, like, very, very highly regarded, but there's a big difference between whether he's more of like a top 5 to 10 guy versus a number 20 guy. And I'm not even saying that the 20 ranking is accurate. Like, maybe he really is a top 5 to 10 guy, but you know, if he's not, then you wonder if he's more of like a 7, 8 points a game type than like a 13, 14 points a game type. So we'll see, but you know, clearly there's some talent there. And yeah, with the international guys, I think, you know, we just have to see who these guys are and how good they are. But assuming they add you know, Ilan Dinwiddie and Ademara, and then two other international guys, that's kind of four international freshmen, plus Lazar Stefanovic, who's, you know, an international transfer they're bringing over from Utah. So it seems like there are some NIL issues there. So that's why Mick is going that route, so to speak. But, you know, I know there have been rumors as well that Mick is struggling with getting all these guys admitted. You know, so we'll have to see how that shakes out too. And if you know, if Mick is being hampered by a lack of NIL and then also being hampered by admissions, it does make you wonder, you know, if he decides to look around if these issues don't get figured out.
So the one thing UCLA does have going for it on that front is I think Mick has one of the largest buyouts out there. So it's going to be very tough to poach him. He'd have to basically go to UCLA and say, look, I don't want, he almost like breaches contract saying, I don't want to coach here any longer. But if I were UCLA fan, I'd be a little bit apprehensive at this point. Not because like these European prospects might be absolutely dynamite. You know, I've watched Viblu and Ademara, and they look definitely skilled. Konko, I keep calling him Konko. I'm not sure if that's the right pronunciation for his name, but he was Konka, I guess. He was older. He was, I think, 21 as a freshman coming into UCLA. These guys are younger. These are guys who are 17, 18 years old. I believe neither one of them, I'll check now. I don't think that they've actually turned 18 even yet. So they're young and adding a UCLA already has a class. Yeah. So Fablu is 17, turns 18 in June, which is fine. I mean, it's fine to be a freshman, an 18-year-old freshman. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's just, you know, it's a factor. It's like something you think about. And UCLA already has a kind of a lot of freshmen coming in this class. It's they've got Brandon Williams coming in from New York, Devin Williams from Centennial High School, Sebastian Mack from Nevada. All those guys are freshmen. Dylan Andrews is now a sophomore, so he's going to be the kind of the leader of the team. Bona is going to be a sophomore. I think Bona will be back, but it's going to be a little, I think it is going to be a little odd there. I guess Gomez, or sorry, Mara turned 18 last month, but he'll be 18 for the season. I think it would be a little odd to have both Mara and Bona on the court at the same time. I mean, Bona is really a guy who cannot score outside of 4 feet. And now Mara can. Mara can actually shoot jumpers, but you kind of want on offense, I think you want your 7'3" guy like right around the rim at all times, if at all possible. So you don't really want your 7'3" guy out there shooting jump shots. So that's going to be a little bit of an odd offensive fit, even though that's kind of the discussion they've had. And you combine that with just so many young players. I mean, that was kind of like the last podcast I was expressing all these concerns about. Like, you can't just continue replacing departing players with incoming high school players because it just turns your roster so young. And one nice thing about SC getting DJ Rodman is he's in going into his fifth full season of college basketball, just like Boogie Ellis. So you have guys who have a lot of experience now. Same with Joshua Morgan. So, you know, three players on USC's team have already have 4 years of college basketball behind them. That's a lot, and it's important. And you see that on the teams that make the finals and how well San Diego State did, et cetera, et cetera. So having a such a young team and plus all these international players who probably, you know, there is usually a little bit of time to make an adjustment to the American style of basketball. I'm just like all these questions are raised in my mind. Not to mention the Jalen Clark factor. I'm like, if he was actually to return healthy next season, I think it'd be a huge boost for UCLA. But like, how is that even possible? And if he's going to be healthy, why would he even think about coming back? So Those are my thoughts. I mean, any other thoughts you got on that?
Yeah, they're going to be super young. I think with Amara Bonifit too, right? Like you talked about offensively how like Mara can space it a little bit, even though he's 7'3". But defensively, like Bona's got to be around the rim. Like that dude's a rim protector, pretty good rebounder, but you need him to play the five on D. So does that mean like you're going to have a Dame Mara guarding fours, you know, out to the three-point line? Like what if you have a matchup against USC where you have Rodman at the four and – you know, like, is Mara going to guard him all the way out there? I think that remains to be seen. Or if you do put Bona on him, like, it kind of takes away a lot of his value as a rim protector. So I'm not sure it's a super clean fit, but both those guys are talented. And, you know, if they can make it work, they're going to be pretty good.
So I think before we get out of here, probably should talk a little bit about Arizona. They did add Jaden Bradley. I can't remember if we've talked about that on the podcast. That's the Alabama pretty highly ranked top 20 recruit from last year, combo guard, point guard. He'll be paired next year with Kylan Boswell. So you'll be young, but interesting backcourt for them. Arizona struggled with NIL clearly as well. They are targeting now. We mentioned Arthur Kaluma from Creighton, him entering the transfer portal. They're targeting him. They were previously targeting Kamwa from Tennessee, but I don't know if they still are. And then they were also targeting Keshawn Johnson, the San Diego State transfer, who I think Jay Shashir seemed pretty optimistic about, and now they seem to be focusing to Kaluma. So between those three, maybe Arizona gets one of those three. That will make a big difference for their roster next year. Kaluma's probably the biggest talent, I think, and probably to have the most impact, looking to replace Tabellus. But you'd also think that Kaluma probably can command a lot of money in the NIL market. Any thoughts on all that?
Yeah, and I think none of those guys can really shoot, right? So that's kind of interesting. Kaluma's kind of a fake shooter, and Keshawn can't shoot, and Kamwa is like, okay, but you know, he's not that great of a shooter. So I think Kamwa is the best defender of the three. Like, I know Keyshawn's built for his defense and he can guard, but Kamwa was a pretty key piece for that Tennessee defense, which was number one in the country. But I, you know, from what it sounds like, he's going to try to go pro first, even if it's overseas, because he is a Finnish guy. And you know, Kaluma, we'll see. I mean, I think Arizona has a pretty good shot there, but you know, I'm not like the biggest fan of his game, I guess, relative to the national media. So I think he helps them, but isn't quite like a game changing prospect like a lot of people are saying. Like if you had the choice between Kaluma and Julian Phillips, it's pretty clearly Julian Phillips for me. I think his defense is just, you know, at a much higher level than Kaluma's. But either way, Jaden Bradley, yeah, so he's former top 30 recruit. I think his car was at the scene in the Brandon Miller incident. So Nate Oates also did suspend him for his sophomore year, but he got out. So I don't know if Tommy Lloyd's going to do the same thing. you know, really a traditional one. Turns the ball over a decent amount, can't really shoot. But against Houston, he got into the lane a lot and really was, I think, the key for Alabama coming back, you know, against Houston in that game down at the University of Houston. So there is physical talent there, but shooting is the big concern.
Okay, so I guess we will depart, and we may take a little bit of a hiatus because you are not going to be around for a couple weeks, right, Nick?
Yeah. So, you know, look for a ton of news to break as I'm on vacation here. But, you know, either way, I think if you're USC, you have to feel pretty good about the 11 you've got heading into next year. And, you know, I think with football and with basketball, you're probably looking at the Pac-12 favorite. So pretty exciting time for the school.
Very exciting time. I may or may not be able to pull off a podcast without Nick here. I mean, I really don't want to do one by myself, and the podcast is so much better when Nick is involved. But if some, you know, kind of news warranting a podcast, maybe I can recruit somebody to, you know, kind of be my sidekick on the podcast. But otherwise, Nick, enjoy your hiatus and your trip. And for everybody else, fine on.
Right on.